Okay, so we'll get started. Gatvach. Today's daf is Kuf Mem Aleph 141, and we'll pick up on Kuf Mem Amabez at the Mishnah. So says the Mishnah, Garfin Milufnei Hapatam. So Garfin, we have this expression. We talk about sometimes cleaning out the oven. In this case, it's talking about the feeding trough where a patam, Rashi says, is a shor shemefatmin also, that it's a ox that they're trying to fatten it up. Rashi says, garfin avos shelofon of b'shabbos, that you can clear out the feeding trough that's in front of it on Shabbos. Losses a tocho teven v'hasorin, that you could put in the wheat and the barley. So you don't want to have dirt mixed in, and then the animal is not going to want to eat the food that you give them. So therefore, you can clear it out. Okay. So garfin l'mfnei patam u'mesalkin l'tzadim l'mfnei arei. So the way different Rishonim learn different ways, but the way Rashi learns is that if you have this straw or wheat or barley, whatever it is that you're feeding the animal, that you could move it off to the sides. Mipnei arei, Rashi says, because the concern would be that kishu rav, when you have a lot of food, kadesh lo yidrasenu berei, so that the animal won't trample on it together with his waste, his excrement, and then the idea would be that he would become disgusted by it and won't eat. So therefore, you can clear out in front of an animal that you're fattening, you can clear out the feeding trough, and you can also, if need be, move the food to the side so that it doesn't get mixed with his excrement and become disgusting. Divrei Rabbi Dosa, these are the words of Rabbi Dosa, the Chachamim Osrim, and the Chachamim say it's Osir. Now, what is it that the Chachamim are saying Osir? The Gemara is going to deal with that right away. It continues the Gemara, the Mishnah, Notlin Milifnei Behemazu, that if you're feeding one animal and you want to take the food from that animal and move it to another animal to feed a different animal, you're allowed to do that and it's not a problem. Rashi says, the thought would be maybe the animal's not going to eat it, or it's excess, it's tircha yisera, it's too much work. So we say but Rashi says it's something that's fit for the other animal, because that an animal doesn't mind getting leftovers from the animal's peer, from another animal. So therefore, because the second animal will eat the food that was left over from the first, you are allowed to move it on Shabbos. Okay, says the Gemara, Ibayluhu Rabbanan Aresha Pligi or Aseifa Pligi. Oh, atarvayu pligi. So the structure here was, the Mishnah said two halachas, and that said these are Rav Dosa's words and the Chachamim Asr. So the Gemara wants to know, when the Chachamim say Asr, to that which Rav Dosa said is Mutter, were the Chachamim arguing on the first point, the second point, or both? So the first point would be the idea that you could clear out the trough of the animal. That's the first point. The second point was, if there's excess food, you can move it to the side so that it doesn't get mixed in with the animal's waste. So the question is, which are they arguing on? So the Gemara says, Tashma, come in here, Desanya, we learned in a brisa of a Chachamim, Rav, and the Chachamim say, Echad Zeh, whether it's moving, clearing out the trough, V'echad Zeh, or it's moving the food to the side, Lo Yisal Kenel, it's done, and you shouldn't move it. So therefore, the Chachamim argue on both. So Rashi explains, and we're going to see it a little bit in the Gemara now. So the issue by the first one is a question of that if you're clearing out the feeding trough, you might come to smooth over holes that are on the ground when you're smoothing the trough. And Rashi explains that you might actually want to do this because if there are holes in the ground, then some of the barley that you're feeding the animal could get lost. So we'll see exactly what the case is in the Gemara about what kind of trough it is, but that would be the machlokas, is are we concerned with smoothing the ground? And in terms of the second one, so the question is, it's really, Rashi explains, maybe we say that some of what you're moving is not fit because you have something that's nimas, and therefore it's already disgusting and you're going to handle it, something that the animal won't eat because it's disgusting. So it's an issue of mukta. So we're saying they argue in both cases. In the first, they argue about cleaning off the trough because you might come to smooth out the ground. And they argue by moving the food because since some of the food the animal food will already have become mixed with the excrement, which would be disgusting, it'd be disgusting to you, but even to the animal won't eat it, and therefore it's an issue of muksa. So we say, fine, they argue on both. So now, says the Gemara, Amr Chista. Rav Chista says, Machlokes be'evus shel karka, that when we talk about them clearing out a feeding trough, and then Rabbi Dosa says it's mutter, and Chum says it's asr, is talking about one that's on the ground, meaning that the feeding trough itself is four walls. It doesn't have a floor. It's just resting on the floor. So therefore, when you clear it out, you in fact could be flattening or smoothing holes in the ground. So that's where they argue. Avol be'evo shel keli, but if you have a five-sided trough, meaning it has four walls and it has a floor, so therefore there's no concern when you're going to shovel it out, you're not going to reach the ground because it has a bottom. So then, divrei hakol mutter, everyone would say it's permissible. Ask the Gemara. Ve'eva shel karka mi'ikel l'man d'shari hakam mashve gumos. So the Gemara says, wait a second, how is it possible that you could say that they're arguing by where there's the actual ground, the dirt of the earth, because for sure we could be concerned that he's going to smooth out the surface of the earth. But rather, here's what we should say that Rav Chista says. I'm Rav Chista. Machlokas, when the Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim argue, be'eva shel keli, when you're dealing with a five-sided trough where it has four walls and a floor, but if it would actually be just four walls resting on the ground, everyone would say it's asr. So therefore, when it's actual dirt, everyone agrees you cannot smooth it out. However, when there is no dirt floor because the trough itself has a floor, so then Rabbi Dosa says, okay, there's no concern about smoothing out holes in the ground because there is no ground. You're shoveling in the trough itself, so therefore it's mutter. And the Chachamim are going to say it's aser because they're concerned, presumably, that if we allow someone to shovel out to clear out the floor of the trough when it has its own floor, they might also come to do the same when you have four walls resting on the ground, and then he'll come to smooth out the ground, and that would be a problem. So therefore, the Chacham say, not only is it usher when there's actual ground, but even when there's the floor of the trough, we're going to say it's usher midrabana. Okay? So, v'notlan mipnei behema. So the Mishnah said that, we can take food from one animal after animal A finished eating and move it to give it to animal B, because animal B is going to be willing to eat it. So, says the Gemara, Tanachada, we learned one brisa which said as follows, that we will take food from an animal who has a nice mouth, a clean mouth, and we're going to give it in front of an animal who has a foul mouth, but not vice versa. Okay, so that's the first brisa. But Tanya Idach, and we learned another brisa, which was exactly the opposite, which says, we take food from an animal whose mouth is not clean, whose mouth is bad, is ra, and we're going to put it in front of an animal whose mouth is clean or is good. Okay, so we have conflicting prices. One says we go from dirty to clean, and the other says we go from clean to dirty. It says the Gemara, Amar Abaya. Abaya explains, they both prices, Abaya is going to say, are really saying the exact same thing. They're just using different language. But the halacha that they're sharing is the same. And that halacha is, mekame chamra lekame Torah shaklinon, that from in front of a donkey to in front of an ox, we will take food, meaning you could take leftovers from a donkey and give it to an ox, mekame Torah lekame chamra lo shaklinon, but not vice versa. So we would not take leftovers from an ox and feed it to a chamor, to a donkey, presumably because the donkey will not eat it. So Abaya says, that's what both brises are telling me. So now we have to understand, what did the two brises mean, and how are they saying that? So it says, continues the Gemara, second to bottom line, on the bottom of Kuf Mem Amud Beis, this that we said that we take in front of an animal who has a clean mouth and give it to one who doesn't have a clean mouth. The clean mouth is talking b'chamor, the less lay riri, because a chamor doesn't have riri, would be like dripping saliva. So like it doesn't have basically a chamor eats cleanly and doesn't drool all over the food. So therefore, you could take venosim lefnei behemah shepira bipara, and when it says you could put the food from the animal with a clean mouth, which we're saying is a donkey that doesn't drool, you could put it in front of an animal whose mouth is bad, is talking about a para, the islay riri that has this dripping saliva. Okay, so that's the first price. The one that said you go from clean to dirty is saying from a chamor to a shar. Because the chamor does not drip saliva and the shor does. Okay? But so therefore we would not go vice versa. The chamor would not eat food that was left over from an ox because the ox would have drooled all over it. And v'hadiktani, the second brisa that we learned, notulim ofnei behemosha piara, it said that we take the food from in front of the leftovers from in front of an animal who has a bad mouth. What's that talking about? B'chamor delodayik v'achol. That the chamor is not very particular about what it eats. Rashi says, the daik va'ochel sha'ochel kotzim u'barkanim, that it will eat thorns and thistles. So, and there's basically, that's what makes a chamor have a pi ra, a bad mouth. So it's saying, we'll take food from a chamor who has a bad mouth, meaning he eats anything. V'nosim l'fnei behemah shepia yafa, will give it to an animal who's more discerning in what it eats, is talking about a para, the daiki v'achlo, is careful what it eats. But at the end of the day, so that just explains why the language says we take from the one whose mouth is bad to the one whose mouth is good, is saying we go, both cases telling you a donkey, leftovers from a donkey will go to a shar because it doesn't drool, and leftovers from a shar to a donkey won't go, but you could describe a donkey as having a clean mouth because it doesn't drool, or a dirty mouth because it's not particular about what it eats. And similarly, we can refer to a shar as having a good mouth because it's discerning what it meets, or a bad mouth because it drools. But at the end of the day, that is the. And now, by the way, the Mishnah is not limited to this case. The Mishnah could be talking about a regular case where one chamor finishes eating, you could give it to another, or one shar finishes eating, you could give it to another. But if you're going cross species, so then it's telling us that you can only go from donkey to shor, but not vice versa. Okay, says the Mishnah, Kuf Mem Aleph 141, Amud Aleph, fourth line down. Okay, so says the Mishnah, Hakash Shalgabe Hamita, that if someone had straw on their bed, so now, Rashi points out, V'stama lahasaka, generally speaking, straw is for fuel, for firewood, or not fire, whatever, you burn straw for fire. Umuktzahu, and therefore it's muktzah. Uba lishkavaleh, and he wants to come lay on it. Uminano, he's shaking it. Kadeshi hait saf, so that it should be like light or fluffy. Virach lishkav, and soft to rest on it. So basically, someone had straw, and we generally assume that straw is muktzah because it's for burning, for fuel. So if there was straw on a bed, lo yenanenu biyado, you shouldn't move it with your hand because it's muksa. Ela minanoi begufo. But you can move it with your body. So how would you do that? Rashi says, for example, bekseifov, with your shoulders. I guess you would lie down and use it, or you'd go on your side and use your shoulder to push the straw around to get it where you want to go. So by the way, today we're going to learn an incredible number of halachas of, you know, all sorts of things about Hilchos Shabbos. So this is a very important concept in Hilchos Shabbos, the idea of being able to move something muktzah, not with your hand, but using your body. And again, there's a lot of discussion about exactly how and when it applies, but an important sugya from this. V'yimhaya maifel behema, but so we said straw is generally speaking, give it used for firewood. But if, v'yimhaya maifel behema, if you had designated it to feed to your animals. So something you feed to your animals is not muksa, because you can feed it to your animals on Shabbos. O shahayalav kar osadin, or the straw was on a bed or on a surface that had a pillow or a sheet. So that demonstrates that the straw was really there not for fuel for firewood, but rather it was there for a bed. So in that case, either if it is designated for Michael Behemon, therefore not Mokto, or it's clear that he intended it before Shabbos to be for a mattress. So in that case, Minano Beyodo, he's allowed to, you know, touch it with his hand because it's his mattress. That's, he's using straw as his sleeping surface, and therefore it's not Mokto. Continues the Mishnah. Machbesh Sabali Batim Matirin. So let's just talk about what a machbesh is. So Rashi explains that I won't read it inside, but he says it's two long boards and they're heavy, and basically this was a system of getting wrinkles out of clothing. And instead of using an iron, the way they would do it is basically they had a lower a board that you put the clothing on, and you would have a second board that would come on top and would press down with weight on the clothing. And that would basically smooth out any wrinkles. So Rashi explains that out of the bottom thing, you had four posts coming up, and then the top piece of wood would go, had holes in them for those four posts, and it would go up and down the posts. And when it was pushed down, you would slide in a yesed, a spit, or a nail, and that would hold the top board down on top of the bottom board. So this was a pressing device for pressing clothing. So says the Mishnah, Machbesh Sobalibatim Matirin Avalokovshin, that you can release it. Let's say if someone has his home press, we're not talking about a professional launderer. Someone just had one of these at home. So the idea is if it's locked in place where that nail, that spit is holding down the top board, you could take out that spit, lift up the top board enough to get your clothing out. It's not a problem because you're using it, for its purpose, and it's not, therefore you're allowed to take things out. But avalo kovshin, you can't put something in. And Rashi says because that's tzorechol, because that's for the weekday needs. So evidently, when they used to put this, when you used to put clothing in there, you'd have to leave it there for a while. So if someone were to try it, were doing it on Shabbos, they're really preparing their clothes for Sunday or Monday. So that obviously you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, but you're allowed to release it. Vishal Kovsin, but when you're talking about like a professional press, one that a launderer uses, lo yigabo, don't even touch it. Different discussion about what exactly is the reason, but you're not allowed to open it, and surely you're not allowed to put anything in it. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Im hayam muter meir of Shabbos." That again, in discussing Rishonim, whether Rabbi Yehuda is arguing or explaining the Tanakhama, but whatever the point is, Rabbi Yehuda says that if it was already released on erev Shabbos, so it means that maybe the spit was taken out or something, but the board is still there, something like that. Matir is kulo v'shomto. So then you can, once it's half removed. Half opened, you can open it fully and remove it. The way Rashi learns, the concern is when you have a professional press that it's kept very, very tight. They're connected, in other words, it's giving a tighter squeeze, and therefore Rashi says umahadik, it's carefully it's strongly connected. Vehatera shelo domalestira, that when you release it, it's as if you're doing destruction, stira, you're destroying a building. So you had something that was two boards that were very closely squeezed together. So if you release it on Shabbos, that would be like destroying something. However, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if on Erev Shabbos, some part of it was released, so it's not so tight anymore, so then it would not be an issue of stira, issue of destruction to take it out. Again, that's the way Rashi learns. Okay, says the Gemara, Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, Om Rev Nachman, Hai Pugla Mamala Lamata Shari Mamata Lamala Aser. So Pugla, the issue that we're dealing with, Rashi says it's a tznon, it's a radish. So if you'll remember, we kind of dealt with this topic a little bit in a different context. We, twice in Shabbos, at least twice, we dealt with this idea that if someone were to take a vegetable and plant it in the, we learned it in the halachas of Kloya Kerem, that they would take a vegetable and they'd stick it in the dirt. So we said, that's not considered, it's not a problem of Kloya Kerem, not a problem of Shvias, not a problem of reaping, because, so that's the context in which we learned it. But you see the idea that they used to take vegetables and stick them in the ground. Why did they do it? Rashi explained that that somehow would keep them fresh. So the issue is as follows, that a radish evidently is larger on the top and it tapers down to the bottom. So the halacha that Rav Nachman is saying is if the radish is resting where the top is, the top of the radish, which is the wider part, is sticking out of the ground or reachable, so then you can pull out the radish out of the ground. Why? Because the largest part is at the top. So you pull it up and then the small part comes up beneath it. You're not disrupting any of the dirt. But says Rav Nachman, if it was flipped so that what's sticking out of the ground is the small, more narrow portion of the radish, so what's going to happen is if you pull it up by that top, so then the dirt is covering the remainder, and in order to get the larger, what's on top, which is the bottom, which is the thinner part, in order to get that out, you're going to end up moving the dirt that's covering the larger part of the radish. So that's what Rav Nachman says. Hi, Pugla, you have this radish, milmala lamata, if it's top to bottom, meaning the bigger part is near the surface of the ground, or at the surface of the ground, shari, then you can remove it because you're not moving any dirt. Milmata lamala asar, but if the bottom part of the radish, the thinner part, is what's at the top, at the surface of the ground, if you're going to pull it out, you're going to end up moving dirt, and therefore it's aser, says Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Adar Bar Abba said Amri Bei Rav that in the base medrash they said Tanina the Lok Rav Nachman. We have a Mishnah. That our Mishnah, which shows not like Rav Nachman, because basically Rav Nachman's saying, if you move dirt when you're holding the radish, if through the agency of the radish you move dirt, that's a problem in muktzah. So what does it seem? It seems to be saying that indirect moving of muktzah is aser. So he says, we learn in our Mishnah, not like Rav Nachman, because we say, hakash, if you have straw, shagabe amita, that's on a bed, lo yinanenu biyado, he can't move it with his hand. Why? Because it's muktzah, because we assume it's for burning, which he can't use on Shabbos. But we say in the Mishnah, avo menana begufo, that you can move it with your body, and it continues, and if it was designated for food for an animal, or it had a pillow or a sheet on it, so then you could do it directly. So, shmamina, you should hear from this, tilto manatzat lo shmei tilto, that carrying, moving muksa from the side, meaning through the agency of another item, indirect moving of muktzah is okay. You see that from our Mishnah. And so that conflicts with what Rav Nachman was saying. Rav Nachman was saying you can't pull out the radish if you're going to move the dirt. And we're saying, what's the problem? Because it's not a problem. You're not moving the dirt directly. You're only moving it through the agency of the radish. Shema mina. In fact, you can hear from that. And therefore, we do not accept this halacha of Rav Nachman. And even if the bottom part of the radish is near the ground, you can pull it up. And even though it's going to move some dirt out of the way, it's not a problem because it is tiltol min atzad. It's carrying from the side. Okay. Amar Reb Yehuda. So, again, we're going to jump from topic to topic. Lots of Hilchos Shabbos. Amar Reb Yehuda says, Hani pilpili. So pilpili are peppercorns, like, what you grind up for pepper. So we say, Meidek chada chada bekata de sakina shari. Tarti asir. So he says, if you're going to grind up one at a time using kata de sakina is the handle or the handle of a knife, shari, that's permitted, tarti, but to take two peppercorns would be asar. So basically the halacha of Yehuda is telling us is you have two forms of shinoi going on here. One is you're using the back of a knife and you're not using a regular grinding implement or grinding surface, and also, you're only doing one peppercorn at a time, which is not the typical way to do it. So we say that's mutter, but to do two at a time is asar. Rava Omar, Rava argues and says, Kivan de Mishani afilu tuvanami. He says, look, you don't need both of these distinctions where you're using the back of a knife and you're only doing one peppercorn at a time. You could do many of peppercorns at a time as long as you're using the back of a knife, and that's a sufficient shinoi, the fact that you're not using a regular grinding place to do it. Okay, that's halacha Rabbi Yehuda. Next halacha. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Man de sachi b'maya, lingov nafshi b'resha, v'hadr lislik, dilma asli lasuya dalad amas b'kamulas. So he says as follows, if someone was bathing in the water, he should, lingov nafshi, he should dry himself b'resha, v'hadr lislik, basically he should come out of the water and maybe grab his towel and dry himself off, you know, as he gets out of the water, and then he should come out of the water once he's dried off. Why? Because Dilma Asi Lasuya Dalad Amas Bekamulas. Because otherwise we're worried that what's going to happen? He's going to get out of the water and he's going to have water on his body and he's going to walk Dalad Amas in a Karmelis. And because generally speaking, the we know that a river or the sea is a Karmelis, and the area next to it, they don't generally abut to a Rishus Rabim. So he's coming out of the water and he's walking in a Karmelis and he's going to carry this water, Dalad Amos. So ask the Gemara, I hachi, if so, ki kanachis nami kadachi kocho Dalad Amos v'asir. So we say, well, wait a second. If that's a problem, if you're going to carry water on your body for Amos is going to be a problem, then what about the fact that when you go into the river or into the sea, basically your force is pushing water more than Dalad Amas in within the water. In other words, you're creating a ripple and you're sending water more than 4 amas away. And as we just said, a body of water is a karmelis itself. So if moving water by carrying it on your body is a problem in a karmelis, so why is going in the water okay? Why not worry about the fact that you're pushing some of the water more than Dalad Amas? So the Gemara says, kocho b'karmelis lo gazru. The whole idea, as we know, the issue of carrying Dalad Amas is only Darabanan. Min HaTorah, the problem with carrying 4 amas is only if you're in a Rishus HaRabim. So the Rabbanan were Masakim because a Karmelis looks somewhat like Rishus HaRabim, somewhat like Rishus HaYachid, so we give it stringencies of both, and one of the stringencies we apply is that you can't carry an item in a Karmelis Dalad Amas. So that's only Drabbanan. And in terms of kocho, if something that you did indirectly, it came about through your force, through your action, but, excuse me, you're not doing it with your hand, so in that case, Chazal were not Mesakin. So, when you go into the water, and by going in the water, you're pushing some of the water more than Dalad Amas, that we weren't Mesakin because it's kocho. But, when you come out of the water and you have water on your body and you walk Dalad Amas, so then you're actually carrying water directly. It's not just kocho. It's not your where you initiate your force and then it goes on its own. That's the case of kocho, but rather you're actively carrying it for Amas, and that's going to be a problem. It's interesting. There's a lot of discussion in the Mefarshim, contemporary more, I guess more since the Hasidim came around, although they weren't the only ones, but in other words, it talks about people who go to the mikvah on Shabbos, men who go to the mikvah, and their payas and their beard is dripping. Why is it dripping? Because we know that if you're going to go to the mikvah on Shabbos, you can do that, but you can't squeeze out your beard or your payas because then it's an issue of schita. So the issue is we don't let people dry out their beard and payas, and the question is, if they're going to go walk now, they're going to be carrying water in their beard and payas. So it's actually interesting sugya relating to this whole question that we've addressed here, but we're not going to get into it now. But it's an interesting thing to know. Amar Abaya v'itim Rabbi Yehuda. Abaya says, and some say it's Rabbi Yehuda says, tit shal gabe raglo mekancho bekarcho ve mekancho bekosal. So if you're walking around and you have tit is like clay or mud on your foot, that you can wipe it off on the ground. So you can, you know, if you have on your shoes some mud, you can wipe your shoe on the ground. Ve'en mekancho bekoso, but you can't wipe your foot to clear off this clay or this mud. You can't rub your foot against a wall. Amar Rava, my time of bekoso lo. He says, what's the reason that you can't do it on a wall? Mishum de mechzi kibona. So presumably it's because, what's the concern? That if I wipe off clay or dirt on the side of a wall, I'm actually contributing to the building of that wall, because people used to coat their walls with plaster or something like that. And therefore, that's the reason why you can't rub this clay off your foot onto the wall. Ask the Gemara, Habinyan Chaklahu. So the Gemara said, but that's not a normal way of binyan, and you shouldn't make a gzera, because normal people didn't use regular dirt or mud from the ground to build their houses. The only people who would do that, chakla, is like a reference to like the villagers. We talk about a plate that's very flat, that we call that a plate of chakla of the villagers. So basically he's saying only very poor primitive people build their houses with regular mud. So this doesn't make sense that you should not be able to rub your shoe off with clay on a wall. Elam or Rava, so rather says Rava, it's the opposite. Mekancha v'kosa v'en mekancha v'karka. So you can rub it on a wall. We're not worried that by rubbing it on the wall you're building, because the only people who build that way are a small minority of poor villagers. But while you can rub it on a wall, you cannot rub it on the ground. Why can you not rub clay off your foot or mud off your foot on the ground? Dilma asi lashvi egumos, because maybe, as we see in this Masechta many, many times, there's a lot of concern. They lived in places that had earthen floors, and people used to like a smooth floor, so there was always concern on Shabbos that you would smooth it out. Itmar marbre dervina amar echad zev yechad zev aser. So marbre dervina said, this rubbing your foot on the wall or rubbing your foot on the ground, in both cases it's usur. Presumably rubbing it on the wall because you're building, rubbing it on the floor because you're going to come to smooth out the surface of the ground. Rav Papa said echazav yechazav mutter. He says both of them are mutter. Your rubbing on the wall is not a problem, because that's just a small percentage of people build that way, the poor villagers. And rubbing it off on the ground, we're not concerned that you're going to come to smooth out holes in the surface. So ask the Gemara, Lamarbre de Ravina, according to Marbre de Ravina, who said that you cannot rub your shoe against the ground or against the wall, but my mekanchile, so what are you supposed to do? Where do you rub off your shoe when you have mud on your shoe or on your foot? If you can't do it on the ground, you can't do it on the wall. So Marbre de Ravina would tell you, mekanchile bakara, you could wipe it against a board. Why? Because you're not going to come to flatten out any holes, and it's not a part of a structure, so therefore it's not a problem to do it. So that's the solution. If you hold both are usser, then the place where you can wipe off your shoes or your foot is going to be on a board. Amar Rava, again, new halacha, just jumping around, lots of Hilchos Shabbos. Lo leisiv inish apume de lechaya, dilma megandra lechefetz v'asi lasuye. So a person should not sit at the edge of a lechi. So we know, what was a lechi? A lechi was, if you had a mavoi that opened to Rosh Hashanah, and we've talked about this many times, houses in the Talmudic and Mishnaic era opened on the courtyards would open onto a mavoi, the mavoi would open onto Rosh Hashanah. So because the mavoi, in a certain sense, looked like a Rosh Hashanah, and we don't want people to carry from the Rosh Hashanah into the mavoi, because min haTorah the mavoi is a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So in order to allow for carrying in the mavoi, we said you either have to put up some heker, some distinction, something that would be noticeable to tell you you're going into a lechi now, into a mavoi, and therefore you would put up either a lechi, which is a post along the side of the wall, or a koro, which would be a board on the top. So in any event, so it says a person should not sit next to the lechi, basically meaning don't sit at the front of a mavoi. Why? Because maybe megandra le chefetz, that something's going to roll away from you, and you feel like you're sitting pretty much in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, right? Because you're right at the edge of the mavi. The mavi itself was in the hustle and bustle of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So if you're sitting in the mavi and something rolls 2-3 amas into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you might feel like, big deal, I'll go pick it up. It's not 4 amas in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. You're going to go get it 2-3 amas. You're going to take it back. But meanwhile, what have you done? You've picked up something in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. You've brought it back into the mavi with you. And then you've carried from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So therefore, the halacha that Rav is telling you is, don't get yourself into this situation. Don't sit at the edge of a mavi next to the Rishus HaRabim, sit further back in the mavi where you're going to have no question to think that you're in the Rishus HaRabim, and you won't come to carry an item that rolls away from you from a Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. V'amar Rava, again, nu halacha, lo letzadid inish kuba, let's just see what the girsa here is, kuba ba'ara, dilma asil ashve gumos. So basically, it says you shouldn't take a kuba. Kuba is like a bucket or a barrel. And the idea would be the way people litzadeh, you take it from side to side, basically what they would do is when you had a barrel, you wanted to create a barrel or a bucket, whatever it was, you wanted to create a flat surface for it. So you would take the bucket and you would like move it back and forth till you got it onto a basically flat surface. So he's saying don't do that because the concern would be that that while you're like shaking this bucket back and forth to get it on smooth surface, you're going to come to potentially fill in holes in the ground, and that would be an isser of bona, an isser of construction. V'amar Rava, nu halacha lo lahadik inish udra bepuma de shisha dumasili de shita. So it says as follows: you shouldn't lahadik is to put in tightly. Udra, Rashi explains, are mochin shesosman behem piapach. That these are pieces of cloth that you would stop up the mouth of like a jug or something that has comes to a small opening at the top. So the idea would be that you shouldn't stuff cotton in there, or not cotton, any kind of cloth in there, because maybe you'll come to schita. Now it's not entirely, it seems to be from the Mepharshim that we're talking about something that either was, you're talking about cloths that were wet, or there's a presumption that when it's in there, it's gotten wet previously from what's in the jug over there. But the basic point is, if they're wet, don't stick them in the top of the jar, a jug, in order to close it up, because when you're squeezing in these cloths to create a plug to close up the top, you're going to end up squeezing out some of the liquid that's in them, and that's going to be an isser of schita. Amar Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana says, tit shagabe bigdo, mekaskiso mi bifnim, vein mekaskiso mi bachutz. So if someone says, if you have tit, you have clay or mud on your beged, on your garment, so what you should do is you should reach up behind it and kind of rub the fabric against itself from the inside of the fabric, but not from the outside. So the idea would be that you're doing it in a little bit out of the ordinary fashion, that you're coming around from the back end to rub it, and you're not doing it from the front. That Rashi says, mi bafnim, so it says it's not clear that you're doing it to clean it. That now it's not going to be liban no matter what. It's not going to be malabin. It's not going to be whitening it no matter what. Rashi's going to explain why in a second. But he says you want it to be unclear that you're trying to clean, because if it was clear that you were trying to clean it, you were rubbing the outside, we would be concerned that it might look like someone who is whitening or cleaning something is one of the lamentas malachas. Umalabin mamish lohave, Rashi says this is not literally a concern. This is not a concern of the halacha deraisa. Even if you did it outside, it's not a deraisa. They nosen shamayim. Because malabin, whitening, that the Torah makes, forbids, is something that uses water. And in this case, he's just taking his dry beged. So it's saying as follows: if you would use water to clean it, you would be over on the Isser Min HaTorah. If you were to rub it on the outside to try and get this mud or this clay off, it would look like you're being malabin, and therefore Chazal didn't want you to do it, or midrabanan. But if you rub it from the inside, you go underneath the garment and you kind of rub it between your fingers in a way that the mud or the dirt will fall off, that's acceptable because it doesn't even look at all like you're doing cleaning. Meisve, they asked on this a question from the following brisa. Tit shagabi menalo, if someone had mud on his shoe, megarero begav sakin, that you can scrape it off with the back of a knife, meaning not the sharp part of the knife, but the other part of the knife, the flat part. Vishal bigdo, and if you had this tit, this clay or this dirt on your beged, migararoy bitziporen, that you should scrape it off with your fingernail, ubavashaloy kaskes, as long as you don't rub it. So we said that if you got mud on your garment, then you should rub it from the inside. And here we have a brisa that says you shouldn't rub it at all. So says the Gemara, my lashlei kaskes klal. Doesn't this brisa tell us you shouldn't rub it at all, even from the inside? Says the Gemara, no, I'm not worried. Lo shlei kaskes mibachutz ela mibafnim. All the brisa is telling you is the same halacha. You should not rub it on the outside because that looks like malabim, but from the inside that would be okay. So when the brisa says no rubbing, it was talking about no rubbing from the outside, but rubbing from the inside presumably would be acceptable. Amar Rav Avo, Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Yanai. Rav Avo says name Rav Elazar, name Rav Yanai. Megarin mino chadosh avolo yashan, that you could scrape a new shoe, but not an old shoe. Now what are we talking about? We're talking, Rashi says the concern is shekofo v'have memachek, that you're gonna essentially you're gonna peel off some of the, now the Mefarshim seem to say that there's like a hair that's on the leather that they used, I think this is the sole of the shoe or whatever it was, that it pulls off some of the hair. It basically peels off some of the leather surface, and it's an isser of memachek, of smoothing out. So he says, an old shoe, you shouldn't do it. Presumably a new shoe is strong enough that it's not going to be affected by scraping it. So a new shoe you can scrape, but you cannot scrape an old shoe because it's going to peel off part, and that is an issue of memachek, of smoothing. So kuf memalach on beis, b'mem megarero, with what should you scrape off the bottom of your shoe if you don't want to have this problem of memachek? Amar Bavo, begav sakin, you should use the back of a knife. Okay, so he said this price. So this was Rav Avo, Rav Elazar, Rav Yanai said this halacha, and Amar Le'ahu Saba, this elderly gentleman said to him, Sami didach mikame hadetani Reb Chia, get rid of what you just taught that said that you could scrape a new shoe but not an old shoe, and instead accept that which we learned in the brisa from Reb Chia. The brisa says, Ein megarin lo mino chadash lo mino yashan, we don't scrape whether it's a new shoe, old shoe, doesn't matter, you don't scrape shoes, because we're worried about memachik. Okay, so that's the brisa of Reb Chia. The brisa now, that's the part that was relevant to us. The brisa now continues and talks about a different topic, but we're going to learn it. Lo yisach is raglo shemen v'hu besocha minol o besocha sandal. So he's saying, and you shouldn't pour oil on your foot when your foot is in a shoe or in a sandal. Why? Because the concern would be that if you're pouring oil all over your foot when it's in a shoe, you're going to get oil on the shoe. And when you get oil on leather, it can be an issue of ma'abed, which is the malacha of tanning. So adding oil to leather is an issue of tanning. So therefore, if you're trying to pour oil on your foot, don't do it when your foot's in a shoe, because you're going to end up oiling up the shoe, and that's an issue of tanning. Says the Gemara, but what can you do? Avosach es ragla shemen. You can put oil on your foot, umeniach betocha minol or betocha sandal, and then you could put on your shoe, because that's indirect. You're not pouring oil in a way that it goes on the shoe. You're pouring oil on your foot. You're then putting your foot in the shoe. That's not a problem. And another way to do to get oil on something leather indirectly, v'sachko gufo shemen, you can also put oil all over your body. U'misagel, Rashi says it means misgalgo, you roll around agabe kataplia v'enechoshesh. You can roll on this kataplia and you don't have to worry, even though you're going to get oil all over this piece of leather. What is a kataplia? Rashi says, or shalok, it's a cooked leather, meaning something you've cooked the leather, that you make spreads, like bedspreads for a table, like a tablecloth, or for a bed, like sheets. So it's saying, if you have this leather material that's a sheet, and you want to get oil on it, you obviously can't put oil on it directly because it's a concern about tanning, but you can put oil all over your body and go rolling on this sheet, and it's not a problem. Amram Chista, this that we learned, that you can pour oil on your foot and then put it in a shoe, or you could put oil on your body and roll around on this leather sheet. So that's only so if you wanted to like shine it up. But if you were trying to actually tan it, to somehow process the leather of your shoe when you're putting in your oily foot, or of this sheet when you're rolling around on it full of oil, if your intention is to do tanning of any sort, that's asr. Ask the Gemara, la'abdo, you're telling me that you can't do tanning? Pshita, that's one of the lamatas malachas. Vesu, and furthermore, l'tzachtecho mi'ika mandeshari, is there anyone that says you can put oil on leather to shine it up on Shabbos, even if you're doing it indirectly? That's not permissible either. So, eli yitmar hachi yitmar. In other words, you can't purposely try to shine up leather, and you surely can't do anything that tans it in any way. So rather, if anything was said, this is what was said. Amar Rav Chisda says, lo shanu ela shir letzachtecho, avol shir la'abdo aser. That when did they say you could put oil on your foot and then put your foot in a shoe, or you could put oil on your body and roll around on the sheet, is only when the amount of oil is the amount of oil that would be allowed, that would be needed to shine it up, but not the amount of oil that we needed to tan it. So therefore, we're going to say the halacha is as follows. To tan something is usr. To put oil with the intention that it should tan itself, usr. To shine up leather is usr. To intend to put oil on your foot and put your foot in a shoe, or put oil on your body and roll around on a sheet with the intention to shine it up, also usr. What's the only thing you can do? If you're putting oil on your foot for the benefit of your foot, or putting oil on your body for the benefit of your body, and then you want to put your foot in a shoe, or you want to roll around on a leather sheet, so then it depends. If the amount of oil that's on your foot or on your body is the amount of oil that you would have in order to shine up leather, so even though your intention isn't to shine it up, you can put your foot in, you could roll around, because, and even if it shines up, that's okay, because that was not your intention. But even when your intention is not to shine it up and not to tan, but if the amount of oil that's going to end up on the leather is the amount of oil that you would use if you were trying to tan it, then you're not allowed to do it at all, and that's what Rav Chana is coming to tell you. Okay. I'm sorry, what Rav Chisda is coming to tell you. Tana Rabbanan. Lo yotze katam mimino gadol, avo yotze hi b'cholak gadol. So it says as follows, a katan is a child or a small person should not go out with a shoe that's too big for them. Why? Because the concern would be you're sitting there flopping around trying to walk with a shoe that's too big, you're going to end up taking it off your foot and you're going to carry it in Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, you're not allowed to go out in Rosh Hashanah, you're not allowed to go out with a shoe that's too big on you. But you could go out with a chalak, with a garment that's too big on you. Why? Because Rashi says, "Delo nafal minei." We're not worried that it's going to fall off because it's like a shirt. Just because it's too big doesn't mean it's going to fall off. And Rashi says, we're not worried that he's going to take it off and carry it because he's not going to walk around naked in the marketplace. So therefore, clothing you can wear too big because we're not worried that you're going to come to carry it. But a shoe that doesn't fit you, that's a problem because you might come to carry it. That a woman should not go out with a shoe that is a little bit torn. And Rashi says, why? And he says that it's karua mamala at the top part, meaning you don't care if there's a hole in the bottom because people don't see it. But the top part of the shoe, if it's ripped, that the woman cannot go out. Why? The gnaihu law, because it's an embarrassment. The chichaychi law, that when her friends are going to make fun of her and say, what, you're walking around with ripped shoes, shofo maisi law, she's going to take off her shoe and carry it with her. So therefore, we tell her, don't go out with a ripped shoe because we're concerned people are going to make fun of her. She'll take it off and then she'll walk in Rosh Hashanah Dalat Amos. Vlo tachlitz bo, if she has this ripped shoe, she shouldn't do chalitza with it because chalitza, you need a shoe. This is not a perfect shoe because it's ripped. V'yem chalitza chalitza sakshir. But if she went ahead and did chalitza with this ripped shoe with a little bit of a rip, it's okay. It's still a valid chalitza. V'ein yotze b'mino chadash. So, and we have halacha, you should not go out with a new shoe on Shabbos. Now what does that mean? Does that mean no one can go out with a new shoe? The Gemara says, Be'ezah minol amru, what kind of shoe did they say that about? B'minol shel isha, with a woman's shoe. Because if a woman, Rashi explains, if a woman goes out, he says, the isha machpedes, imena mechoven, lemides ragla. If it's not a perfect fit, she's not gonna like it. So therefore, we don't want her to go out with a new shoe for the first time on Shabbos, because maybe she'll find the fit isn't so great. And if the fit isn't great, she's makbid, she'll take it off and she'll end up carrying it. Tani bar kapara, lo shanu el shal yotza ba sha achas mi bod yom. That bar kapara says that we only learned that she can't go out with a new shoe as if she never even wore it for any period of time before Shabbos. Avo yotza sabo me'ar of Shabbos mutter. But even if she went out a little bit, she tried it on when she went to pick it up from the shoe store. And she said, okay, it fits good. And then she took it off and took it home. Now she could go out with it for the first time on Shabbos, because since she tried it on, she'll have known that it fits and we're not concerned that she'll come to carry it. Tani chada. We learned one brisa that says, shomtim mino me'agabe imus. We learned one brisa that says you can remove a shoe from an imus. V'tanya idach, we learned another one, ain't shomtim, that you can't remove it. What's an imus? An imus would be a block that the shaped like, I guess, like a foot that the shoemaker would use, that he would craft the shoe over this piece of, you see that sometimes maybe by the shoe shine places. When they shine a shoe without the customer being there, they stick the shoe on that and, they stick the shoe. Oh, at last. Okay. I didn't even know that word. Thank you, Michael. So the halacha, one brisa says that if you, that you can remove a shoe from this last, I'm told it's called, that you can remove a shoe, and the other brisa says you can't. So it's a stira, it's a contradiction between the brisas. The Gemara says, lo kasha ha Rabbi Elazar ha Rabbanan. One is Rabbi Elazar, one is Rabbanan. Let's see what this is talking about. The Snan, because we learned in the Mishnah in Kalim, Perchavav, that, minal shagabe imus, that if you had a shoe that was on an imus, on a last, Rabbi Elazar metaher, mecham metamin. Rabbi Elazar says it's tahar, and the chum says it's tamay. What's going on here? So the issue is as follows. We know that something cannot be mekabel tuma, cannot accept tuma, until it is a keli, until it's considered a finished product, right? So the question is, if you have a shoe that's still on this last that it was being done with, so Rabbi Elazar says it's not finished. You didn't take it off. You didn't take it off finally. So therefore, it's not yet a finished product. And therefore, if Tuma would touch it while it's on this last, it's not a problem, because it's not a finished keli. And the Chachamim say, no, once it's on the item, once you finish constructing, even though it's on the last, it's not a problem, and it's going to be considered a keli already, and it's going to be tummy. So therefore, we're going to say as follows. If you hold that a shoe that is on the last, but it's finished, is a keli, so then you're allowed to take it off on Shabbos, because it's considered its own keli. Whereas if you hold that it's not a keli, so then you're not going to take it off on Shabbos. So ask the Gemara. So we're going to say that's the explanation. You have two brises. One is like Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. One is like the Chacham's opinion. If you hold that it's a fully finished product, even when it's still on the last, then you would be allowed to take it off, from the imus. So ask the Gemara. Wait a second. I have an issue here. Hani chalarava. This works well according to Rava. The Amar says, "Davar shemalachta leisur ben l'tzarch gufu ben l'tzarch mekamo mutter." That if you have an item whose main malacha is something that's aser, you could use it if you have a tzarch gufu. You have a permissible use for it itself, or tzarch mekamo. What's the classic example? You have a tool, a hammer, for example. We say often, so the hammer itself is aser, because generally you use it it's muksa generally, because you use it to construct buildings, which you can't do on Shabbos. But if you want to take the hammer, because you want to bang a nut to open a walnut, you can do that, because you're using it letzarech gufo for it itself, for a mutter purpose, for a permissible purpose. Alternatively, if you need the area where the hammer is, you can pick it up and move it, right? So he says, okay, so that works well. So according to the one, to Rava, who says that a klisha malachta le'isr, you can move it if you need its place, Shapir works out well. Why? Because the issue that we're dealing with now is as follows. So we said, if you hold that it's a keli, you could take it off the last on Shabbos. But the question is, okay, I get it that it's a keli, according to you, according to the Chachamim, and therefore it's not muksa because it's a keli. But there's a different problem. It's on this last, it's on the imus, and the imus itself is muksa because the imus is an implement of a shoemaker. So we say, according to Rav, who says, klisha malach de l'isser, you're allowed to move it if you need the place for it, so then it makes sense why you could take the shoe off, even though you're touching the imus that's muksa. Why? Because the imus is in a place you need. What place is that? It's in the shoe. You want to stick your foot in the shoe. You can't stick your foot in the shoe if the imus is there. So therefore, you need the place of the inside of the shoe. So according to Rava, it makes sense. You can move it. But according to Abaya, who's of the opinion that it's true you can use a hammer if you want to break break a nut with it, but you can't move it just because you want the space. So then the question, Mayakula Meimar. So according to Abaya, you're saying that once the shoe is a keli and it's you finish crafting it on the imus, you cannot take it off. But ask Abaya, this you're handling the imus, which is muktza, and you're doing it. And you're handling the imus, and it's a klisha malach de l'isser. It's something that is used by a shoemaker, so it's usher, it's muktza. Why, according to Abaya, should you be able to take this off? So the Gemara says, hachum ma'askinim b'rifoy. What are we talking about? We're talking about when is it mutter to take it off? When it's still on this last, it's still on the imus, but it's basically been loosened. You've untied the shoelaces, so now it's very easy to take it off the imus without even moving the imus. So according to Abaya, we're saying that when can you take it off? If it's tied tightly, you can't take it off even though it's a keli because you're going to end up touching the imus and moving the imus. But if it's put on very loose, it's already been loosened, then you can just take the shoe off without affecting the imus. So then that's when it's mutter. The Sanya, where's this notion of it being loose? Rabbi Yehuda says, imhaya rofoy mutter, that if it's loosened, it's mutter. So now, says the Gemara, so if Rabbi Yehuda is saying that's when you could take something off is when it's loosened, time of the ripoy. So you're going to say the reason you could take it off is because it's loosened. Hala rafui, but if it wasn't loosened, lo, you would not be able to do it. So we're now implying that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, when can you take a shoe off the last? Only when it's loose, but not when it's tight. So wait a second. So, honey, chala baya damashamalach talisa litzarach gufa mutter litzarach makama asar. Shapir. It works out well according to Abaya, because Abaya is the one who says that you can't move something litzarach makama. So the only time you could take this shoe off the last is if it's in very, loose fitting, so you could take it off without moving the last. That's when you're allowed to do it. But the implication would be that if it's tied tight, you cannot do it. So, elal rava damar bain litzarach gufa bain litzarach makama mutter might So he said, but wait a second, according to Rava, who says that you're allowed to move it, klisha malach de l'isser, like this last, even though it's used by a shoemaker, you're allowed to move it as a tzarech makomo, and you do in fact need the place that it's occupying, because you want to put your shoe in the foot, and you don't want the imus to be in the shoe. So why is it that you can only remove it when it's weak, when it's loose, but you can't remove it when it's tied tight? Even if it's tied tight, you should be able to do it, because it's not a problem to handle this imus, because according to Rava, if you need the place where the imus is, which is the inside of the shoe, you can carry muktza. So now we've switched it, because once we said we're only talking about a loose shoe, it works well for Abaya, but it's a question on Rava. Why only when it's loose, even when it's tight? So the Gemara answers, Hahid Rabbi Yehuda Mishund Rabbi Lazar Hu, Rabbi Eliezer Hu. So he says, you're wrong. When Rabbi Yehuda was coming to say, when Rabbi Yehuda was coming to say it, we're talking about a loose shoe, that was not coming to explain according to the Chachamim. The Chachamim, so the way Rava would tell you is the Chachamim who say you could take a shoe off a last, they would say you could take it off no matter what, whether it's tight, whether it's loose, and that's according to the Chachamim. And Rava says, and they would hold like me. Why can you take it off when it's tight? Because it's a klisha malach de l'isser, but it's tzarech makomo. So he says, when did Rabbi Yehuda say that something needed to be loose? That was not talking about, that was not going according to the Chachamim. Rather, that was going, Rabbi Yehuda was explaining Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says that even if a shoe is fully finished, if it's on the last, it's not considered a keli because you haven't finished it by taking it off the last. To that, the son Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Im Haya Rafui Mutar. If, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who normally would tell you, you cannot take a shoe off a last. Why? Because it's not yet a keli. If it's not a keli, it's mukta. He says, when does he say it's not a keli if it's still on the last? That's only if it's tied tight on the last. But tells Rabbi Yehuda comes to tell you that if it's loose, so then even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that at that point it's a keli, even though it hasn't been removed from the imus, it is still a keli because you've finished all the work, you've loosened the shoe, and now you just need someone to slip it off. That is considered a keli, even according to Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, we're fine. Rava's of the opinion, Tzarech Mekomo, you're allowed to touch muksa. Therefore, he would explain that the Chachamim, who say that you could take the shoe off the last, you could take it off whether it's tight or whether it's loose, because it's a klisha malach to le'isra and it's Tzarech Mekomo. Abaya would say, no, you can't. You can only do it when it's loose. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda was talking about when he talked about looseness, was according to the Chachamim. Rava would tell you, no, when Rabbi Yehuda talked about looseness, it was coming to loosen, pun intended, it was coming to loosen the rule of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, who says that a shoe that's still on a last is not a keli, that's only if it's still tied tight. Once you've loosened it enough, and basically you've now finished making the shoe, it's its own keli, and therefore even Rabbi Eliezer would be of the opinion that you could take it off because it's its own keli. Okay, Hadron Alach Tolan. Says the Mishnah, Noto Adam has been no, Evan be Yado, a person can carry his son, Rashi says in a chatzer, someplace where he's allowed to carry, he can carry his son, Evan be Yado, even though his son is holding a rock. So obviously the man can't carry a rock, but he can carry his son who's carrying a rock. The Kalkola Evan Mitsoho. Similarly, you could have a basket and a stone is in it. And the reason for that is going to be, well, we'll see. We don't have to get ahead of ourselves. We'll see what it is in the Gemara. Umetaltalin truma tamea im tahara v'machulin. That if you have truma that is tame, so we know tame truma can't be used. You can't feed your animal. You can't eat it yourself. If you want, you could burn it, but there's nothing you could do with it on Shabbos. So tame truma is mukza. But nonetheless, if it's in something together with tahar truma or with chulin that you're allowed to eat, you can move that item that contains even the muktzah truma that's tameh because there's also truma that's valid. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Rabbi Yehuda says, and this is I think an unrelated halacha, but af malin is hamenduma be'echad umeya. That meduma means that you had some truma tameya. I'm sorry, you had truma that got mixed in with non-truma, with chulin. So the halacha is that if you have 101, meaning you have let's call it a loaf of bread. You have one loaf of bread that's truma that got mixed in with 100 loaves of chulin. The halacha is that it's batel, but and so therefore you can eat, theoretically you can eat all 101. But the only problem is that one of them actually belongs to the kohen. So you have to take one out, and then the other 100 you could eat regular as chulin, because basically chulin is batel in 100. One in 100, so if you have 101, you give one to the kohen, and the other 100 you could eat. So the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, is telling you that on Shabbos, you can take out that 101st loaf and free up the other 100 loaves for eating on this Shabbos. And it's not, even though before you take out that loaf, you can't eat any of them because you don't know which one, because you have to take one out for the coin. We'll see. So despite the fact that appears like you're fixing it. Similarly, we know that, like, for example, you can't take Trumas and Maestros on Shabbos because you're fixing it, you're making it usable. But this case where you have 101, because really they're all mutter, it's just you're taking one for the coin so that you're not stealing from the coin, so that you're allowed to do on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava. Rava says, Hotzi tinach chayv ekis toli b'tzavaro chayv. If someone carried out a live baby and the baby had wrapped around his neck a kiss, like a wallet, didn't have money in it or anything, just something, it was something that the kid played with. So chayv mishum kiss, that you're chayv for taking out the wallet, but you're not chayv for taking out the baby. We're going to ask why in a minute. Tinuk meis v'kis tolei lo b'tzavara. What happens if someone takes out a dead child and that child has a wallet around his neck? Pater, then he's pater in all cases. He's not chayav for taking out the kid, and he's not chayav for taking out the wallet. So now we're going to understand this. Tinuk chayav v'kis tolei lo b'tzavara chayav. Chayav mishum kis. So we said that if you have a live tinuk, a live baby, and he's wearing a wallet around his neck, you're chayav for taking around the wallet, you're chayav for taking around out the wallet. So ask the Gemara, v'lechayav nami mishum tinuk. But wait a second. Why are you only mechayav him for taking out the wallet? Why aren't you mechayav him for taking out the kid also? So therefore, in general, you're not chayav for carrying a human being. So this father who carried out his infant with the wallet, he's not chayav for the infant because the infant is a live being, but he is chayav for the wallet. So ask the Gemara, okay, wait a second, but why is he chayav for the wallet? Libato kis legabe tinuk. So, but why not say that the wallet is batal to the tinuk? Where do we have such a concept? Milo tanan, didn't we learn? We had this Mishnah on, didn't we learn in a Mishnah as a chayav b'mito? We had this earlier in Shabbos, I believe. That if you have a live person in a bed and you carry them out in the bed, pater afal amita, you're not only chayav for carrying out the person, but you're not chayav for carrying out his bed, shamita tfela lo, because the bed was tufel to him, was subsidiary to him. So the Gemara is asking, okay, once you're telling me you're not chayav for carrying out the tinuk, for carrying out the baby, because a baby carries itself, so then, why not, but you're chayav for the wallet, because the wallet does not carry itself. Why are you chayav for the wallet? Say that the wallet is batal to the child, just like a bed is batal to someone when you carry him out in the bed. The Gemara says, mita legabe chay mevatli le, kis legabe tenek lo mevatli le. He says, no, there's a difference, because because the bed is serving the purpose of the person, it's carrying him, so it's batal to him. But a wallet is not serving the person, it's just something that he's carrying, so it's not batal to him. Okay, so now we've analyzed the case where he carried out his live tinuk with a wallet and said he's pater for the tinuk because a living being carries himself, he's chayav for the wallet. Next case, tinuk meis v'kis tolei lo b'tzavara pater. It says if it's a dead child, not only is he not chayav for the child, he's not chayav for the wallet. So ask the Gemara, v'chayav mishum tinuk. Wait a second. Now you're talking about a dead kid. A dead kid doesn't carry himself. So what's the reason that he's putter for the child? So we say, Rava Kriv Shimon Svirle, Rava holds like Kriv Shimon Damar, Ko Malacha Shein Tzarech Lugufo Putter Alel. That any malacha that's not needed for itself is putter. What is this talking about? We've learned many times the machlokas, Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, we've learned about muksa in general, but this has to do with the fact that everyone agrees that malacha has to have a purpose, a positive purpose, a creative purpose. And so the halacha, but the question that's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is, does it have to be creative for the item inherent in itself or not? So Rabbi Shimon, who's more makel, is of the opinion that if you're carrying something, not for the benefit of the item itself, but for some ancillary benefit, that's not gonna be a malacha that's asur on Shabbos. And what's the classic prototypical case of this is if someone has a dead body in their house, and they take the dead body out of their house and stick it in the Rishus HaRabim, because they didn't want the body in their house, right? Or maybe because they wanted the body, they wanted to go bury the body. It doesn't matter. The point is that he's not doing anything for the body by taking it. So the carrying the body is not a malacha according to Rabbi Shimon because it's not for the benefit of the body. Rabbi Yehuda has a broader description and says, no, that if you're accomplishing something such as you don't want this dead body in your house and therefore you carry it out, that's enough to make it a malacha. So in any event, so the Gemara is explaining that when he takes out a dead baby with the wallet, he's not chayav on the dead baby. Why? Because he's going like Reb Shimon, who says that a malacha shein tzarich l'gufo, such as carrying out a dead body, is not a malacha. So now you might ask me, well, what about the wallet? So that Rashi says, the kish shahayatali b'tzavara l'sachik bo. So this wallet that the kid was carrying just for his, you know, entertainment, agav merare mevatale legabe tinik shemes v'lo chashiv le hahishaita. He basically says the father, in his grief, just treats that like part of the kid. He's just carrying the kid with something that the kid was on, but he's not, it doesn't have an identity independent of itself in the father's grief, and so therefore he's not chayav for carrying out the dead body because he holds like Rabbi Shimon that a malacha shein tzarich l'gufo is not a malacha, and he's not chayav for carrying out the wallet because the wallet is, at that time, because of his grief, not chashuv to him, and therefore it's not considered a case of carrying. Okay, Shavuot Tov, Kesvach.
Thanks.
You're welcome.